Show me the money, say the Fargo mayor candidates, and there are clear winners and losers in the fundraising game. It was game on for Fargo City Commission candidates last night who had the memorable lines and who sees the city debt as a problem. And is the game changing for farmers when it comes to life insurance? Ag Director Bridget Riedel talks about a growing trend in farm country coming up here today on the Steve Halsham Show. Good morning, my friend. Great to be with you here on a, well, I can say sunny and beautiful Friday morning right now because it really is, but it's going to get windy again today. Boy, I'm glad we had that day Wednesday. My friends in Watford City tell me that they have had nasty winds this week. We've had bad, but they've had worse. I was talking to Matt Schultz, Midwest Wealth Matt, yesterday, and he said they were supposed to have opening day at Fox Hills yesterday, but they had 70-mile-an-hour winds. Oh, my word. We get wind in the valley, but I don't remember us having 70-mile-an-hour gusts. That's insane. And, yeah, pretty tough to play golf in that. So hope everybody in Watford gets a chance to play golf today or tomorrow. I don't know if it's going to be much better out there. They're going to be better today here. Tomorrow looks like it could be a really nice day, though. And then Sunday, at least in the eastern half of the state, it sounds like we're going to get some rain. And I think I heard Dean say, we may, in all parts of our listening area, even out in western North Dakota, may get some rain over the weekend. And I know my rancher friends out west would love that. I know that anybody here in town who's got a yard or flowers coming up would love that. Farmers, they'll kind of take it or leave it. You know, farmers, they it's a very, very fine line for them. They would like to get, you know, just a quarter inch overnight every night. And but then once the crop gets in the ground, then about 2 inches of rain. And then so you can't make everybody happy. But the good Lord, I think, is going to try here this week because we've had some beautiful days. And then we're going to have a little bit of rain here this weekend. A lot of ground to cover on the show today. It's a very newsy Friday. A lot of times you get to this time of year and it kind of feels like the news cycle is saying, yeah, I'm ready for summer Fridays. Well, not today. Not today. So a lot of ground to cover here on the program today for you. I think I'm officially being ignored by Rob Kupek and Howard Klug. I'll have to try those guys, the Williston mayor and the Minnesota senator from Moorhead, who it's been a week now since my request, and I've heard crickets. So I'm going to have to renew those calls, I guess, over the weekend and try to get those guys on because I know a number of you have asked me, Steve, can you have Howard on to talk about the Williston city budget? And can you have Rob on to talk about why he voted for the semi-automatic firearms ban in Minnesota? So we're trying, friend. We're trying, and we'll get there today. Story of the day today is the campaign finance report that came out in the Fargo mayor's race. And we now know who's got how much money, where it came from. And there are a number of interesting storylines along the way on both sides. So we'll dive into that for you here today. A couple of very interesting comments made last night, the Fargo City Commission debate. We'll dive into that. I think there's a very clear difference in candidates that we're going to dive into here today. We're going to talk about the upcoding and administrative bloat of the healthcare machine in the United States. Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz had a little back and forth about that and how much you are being billed for people just to do clerical work. So we'll talk about that, too, here on the show today. Bridget Riedel, Ag Director, will be in with us as well. So a lot of ground to cover today on the show. Try to get in calls whenever we can today, 701-271-1100. That's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They recently expanded and can get you in fast, now offering counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment. Get in soon at valleychristian.co. I'm coming to you live from the Drive with Vision studio, drivewithvision.com. Vision Ford Lincoln in Wappan. They make buying a car, truck, or SUV easy. All right, let's get to the morning wire semi-automatic storylines as we go rapid fire, giving you a rundown of the world around us here on this Friday morning. It is Friday, May 15th, 2026. How about that? We're basically halfway through May already. Yowza. And the Minnesota State High School girls softball tournament was still won by a guy, and hopefully we can change that when state tournament comes around here in about 3 weeks or so. All right, let's get started with the almanac for today. I can tell you that we will gain today 2 minutes and 27 seconds of daylight. Love all of that. Our record high in Fargo, by the way, 94 degrees set back in 1931. So we've apparently always had the global boiling here. In the markets today, the Dow, S&P 500, NASDAQ, all with big losses early in the trading session today. Nobody seems to know exactly what, but oil is up today. I'll tell you about that in a minute. That's got people a little spooked that this war just might drag on and on and on and on and on. And also some profit taking after a big run up, especially in tech stocks, maybe leading to some of the selling. The numbers are off the worst of the session, so it's getting a little bit better. But there's a big wave of selling, maybe some automated programs selling today too. It'll be interesting to see where we go today. We've had a couple days earlier this week when things looked bad at the start and actually finished up pretty good. So we'll see where this market wants to go today. But yeah, I don't love the oil picture. Up 319 on WTI this morning, 104.36 a barrel. We're almost at that $105 marker. Ugh, as long as we keep that number there, it's going to be really hard for anything to get traction economically here at home, maybe besides some tech stocks that are reporting good earnings, that we're seeing some stock market gains here and there. But a lot of stocks are making all-time lows or 52-week lows too. So it's definitely a selective market out there. So yeah, that might be why we're seeing the sell-off going on today. In the gold market today, we're down $151 an ounce at $4,533. Silver down 10% today at $76.60. Silver has been like a whiplash exercise. Crazy. Silver used to be that sleepy little precious metal that if it went up 5 cents a day, it was big news. Wow. Bitcoin today is acting like silver used to. Unchanged today, about 79,500. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas is $4.52 nationwide. North Dakota, $4.16. Minnesota, $4.41. South Dakota, $4.33. Diesel fuel today, $5.66 a gallon. Yuck. You don't like that, do you, truckers, when the fuel is $5.66. Oh, boy. All right, let's get into the news here today. Stories making headlines. Very quiet day in the war with Iran. Iran's foreign minister said earlier today that his country cannot trust the Americans at all, and they're trying to maintain the shaky ceasefire to give diplomacy a chance. So just a lot of positioning, a lot of talking going on, but not anything really happening. It does not look like the ceasefire or trying to get a deal together is working. We'll see what President Trump's next move is when he returns home from China today. What else can I tell you from the war? That's enough. There just isn't a lot to tell you. Valley News Live reports the North Dakota voters will get to decide this fall about the breakfast and lunch for everybody after a petition drive has officially collected enough signatures to get on the November ballot. You know how I feel about this. But it is going to get on the ballot. Right now, all the polling says it's going to go through. We're going to do our part on this show to do what we can to help you understand we've already solved this problem, and this would be a big waste of money. There's no reason to do this. Michael Howe, the Secretary of State, said, hey, they gave us 57,000 signatures, 49,000 were valid, so it's going to appear on the November 3rd ballot. It would mean that all students in public school get a free breakfast and a free lunch, whether they want it or not. We're going to devote the money to doing it every day. And non-public or private schools and tribal schools would have the option, but not the requirement, to participate. Elsewhere, White Earth Nation has released a financial impact report for its proposed casino and convention center near Moorhead. Clay County's administrator says that the project is expected to cost about $177 million. It will require 391 full-time construction workers. And once built, they're going to need about 600 full-time employees with the average earning about $55,000 a year. There would also be 102 part-time jobs. They think there will be more than 1 million visitors a year, and about 925,000 will come from outside of Clay County. And a sheriff's deputy was shot in the hand during a roadside struggle yesterday outside the southeast North Dakota town of Cullom. The town, population 360, was under a brief shelter in place at the school, and the school had a lockdown while authorities searched for the suspect. It started out several miles away when a deputy followed a driver Eventually, there was a physical encounter on the side of the road. The driver took the deputy's gun, shot the agent in the hand, and took off. The driver was arrested about 45 minutes later. And the Minnesota legislative session set to come to an end. Republicans and Democrats alike are saying we got a lot of good things done. The session's expected to wrap up on Monday. They got a budget deal done on things like license tab fees, property tax relief, and critical access hospitals. Story of the day, though, we now have the money report on the Fargo mayor's race. That's next. Well, I don't know about you, but I've been wondering, how's this mayor's race going to shake out in Fargo? And first thing I go by is, who's bringing the energy? Like, who do I see everywhere all the time? Who's emailing me or sending mailers to my house that's kind of telling me there's a big event going on, you should come to this thing, or here are the candidates that you should get behind? And when it comes to mojo, I feel like the two candidates I'm seeing the most of are Josh Boshay and Michelle Turnberg. And I talked to a couple people over the last day or so about what they're sensing in the race, and it seems like I'm not the only one who's picking up on that. It feels like, to me, that the sign game is being won by Boshay and Turnberg. Dave Pepcorn has been really good on the billboards, but as far as the number of yard signs I see, it's those two, and it's by a mile. And I've not been to every part of Fargo. I've not been to the far north side, but I've been through downtown a few times, the west side, and then in South Fargo, where I live, I drive through a number of different neighborhoods there. And so I was interested to see that the first campaign finance reports have come out on the mayor's race. And Josh Boshay, I'm reading from the Valley News Live story here, has raised more money than everybody else combined. But second place is Michelle Turnberg, and she is significantly ahead of Dave Pepcorn and Denise Kolpak. So Boshay has gotten about $128,000 in donations. He has spent about $80,000 of that. So more than 55% of the donors are from Fargo, 80% from North Dakota. So that's the story going on with Josh. And in second place, there is Michelle Turnberg, and she has had, I think, a pretty good, you know, run of it too, as far as, you know, where she's been at on the fundraising side. But she's not anywhere near where Boshay is on this. And so the forum has kind of the details on the Turnberg side of things there. The story gives a lot of airtime to the Boshay campaign. Don't know if that's intentional, or don't know if that's just the lead story and it takes that much room and space. Michelle Turnberg has reported $44,000 in contributions. So 128 and 44. And then on the kind of finishing out the rest of the story there, Denise Kolpak, $18,000 in donations have come in for her, and Dave Pepcorn, $16,000 in donations have come in from him. So that tells you kind of the story of who has raised how much money. Now, the questions are, where did their money come from? That's an interesting piece of this as well. Are it, you know, little donations, is it big packs or whatever? So Boshay has gotten some money from the PAC side of things. 80% of the donors to Boshay are from North Dakota. More than 80 people and groups donated upwards of $200, and that equaled about $90,000 there. North Dakota law requires candidates to disclose names of donors who give more than $200, but if you're under $200, you don't need to be involved there. The biggest contributor to Boshay was the Next 50 PAC, with a donation of $10,000. And this is a D.C.-based political action committee that's backed candidates across the U.S. Boshay says, I'm proud to have the endorsement of that group. He said it's Definitely a Democratic-based group, but my donors are much more than just Democrats. I have a number of Republicans, business leaders, and community leaders who are seeing it as a nonpartisan race and seeing this as a big piece of the future of Fargo. R.D. Offutt chairwoman Christy Offutt has given $7,500, so that's one of the bigger donations there. And some Democrats in the North Dakota legislature have given some money in there as well. So Michelle's lay of the land there is that her biggest donor was the Badlands PAC. And that is backed by U.S. Senator Kevin Cramer, who gave her $25,000. So more than half of her funding has come from the Cramer PAC. So you've got the top two candidates getting money from politically based groups, even though it's a nonpartisan race. But let's be honest about it. Nothing is nonpartisan anymore. You're governing as these days as either a conservative or a liberal. And I think you definitely say that about Boucher. Boucher is a Democrat in the state legislature. Turnberg has made no secret of where she stands and where she aligns politically. And so not I guess, a big surprise about that. Turnberg was asked by the forum about, is the money coming in from the Cramer camp telling you anything about how you need to vote? And she says, no, not at all. That's not something that that is part of the deal there. The FAR PAC donated $5,000 to Turnberg. They are backed by Fargo-based Pioneer Equipment Dealers Association and the Auto Dealers Association of North Dakota. She is getting donations from Richard Jordahl for $3,000. I don't know if that's Jordahl Homes, but it might be. And a couple of the bigwigs over at PetroServe USA have donated $2,500 each. Dylan Bockhand and Clark Erickson have donated over there. So it feels like right now it's a two-horse race on the fundraising side, and when you got the money, you can do some things. I don't think Dave Pepcorn is out of this thing at all. I think Dave has got a bill, and Denise Kolpak, I would say the same thing. If I had to rank them right now, I would say it's Turnberg and Boucher neck and neck. That's how it feels to me. I've talked to one gentleman earlier this morning who kind of knows this game a little bit, and he says, I think Turnberg would be in the lead if the vote was happening today, but there's no question that Boucher, having raised that much money, and he still has 40, 50 grand to spend, and we're only 3 weeks away, he will make a strong push. So feels to me like 1-2, and then I think it's Kolpak and then Pepcorn slightly behind them in third and fourth in some order there. I do believe that I would expect there to be a late push from Commissioner Kolpak. She knows this game well, and money spent late typically is the money that the political experts will tell you makes the biggest difference. So I expect a push from Denise. I don't know if we're going to see a push from Dave. Dave has seemed quiet to me. I don't see him anywhere. I'm not sensing that big push from him. Now, maybe it's coming. But if I had to pick right now, I don't know. Maybe Kolpak in third, slightly ahead, but neck and neck with Dave in that 3-4 spot. Should be very interesting. Highlights from last night coming up next. 701-271-1100 if you want to weigh in on the news of the day. You can also text me at that number. A couple of text messages have hit that I think work in well here. Steve, how is the story of the day not that the Department of Defense wants a $1.5 trillion budget? $1.5 trillion is more than the next 19 countries combined from a department that has never passed an audit on top of that. Fair point. That is a big story. I don't know if there's an opinion in this. My sense is this is to say we shouldn't be requesting a $1.5 trillion budget. I am a believer in speak softly and carry a big stick, and I'm also a believer in the position that government needs to do what the people cannot do for themselves and not spend money on things that we can do for ourselves. And so for me, national defense is the number one thing. And, you know, smarter people than me will be able to vet out if that's the right number or not. But we need a well-funded military. There is no question about that. And if $1.5 trillion is the number we have to have, then that's the number we have to have. I don't mind the idea of an audit, though. Why would you not? I think an audit should be regularly done. But the problem is with that, it's just like everything else, is how does an audit not get political? You know, because an audit tells you, you know, where you're spent. Well, maybe not. I guess if the audit just says, here's what you have had for money and what you're spending and what your needs are and, you know, where your shelves are empty, I would have no issue with that at all. So I think that's a fair point. Steve, this is easy. The only choices for Fargo City Commissioner are Brecky, Peterson, and Gehrig. They are the only candidates who won't drive the city further into the septic tank. Sadly, only two can make it, but only those three in Turnberg can actually turn things around for Fargo and finally end the leftist insanity that's been destroying the city for decades. So this brings us to what I want to talk about next, and that is the debate that we had last night. We did not have Tony Gehrig. We did not have Derek Arneson. They couldn't make it because of conflicts. That happens. Get it? There's like four of these debates during the election cycle, so you can't make it to everything, and we get that. But we had a really good conversation last night, and I have a million takeaways. If I had like an hour, I could do this probably in more detail, but let me try to give you cliff notes here. I would say that I came away, I didn't know a couple of the candidates at all, and so I learned a lot about them. I think your conservatives of the group are what Adam said in that last text message. Brecky and Chad Peterson are the two that were there last night that I would say are your strongest conservatives. They are going to be the toughest on spending, and they are going to be the strongest on social issues, meaning that there's only so much that we can do. We can't solve addiction in Fargo. We can't solve homelessness. We're supposed to take care of our city and do what our people in our city need. And so we have to let experts take care of things, but the government can't be in the business of ending homelessness is basically what I heard from both of those guys. And addiction, the same thing, too. So they are the ones that are going to line up the most conservative. Then on the other side, you have Anna Johnson and Nikki Gullickson. Nikki from a school board, Anna from Human Rights Commission. And both of them, I think, are wonderful human beings, really good and sweet people, kind, concerned. They're in it for the right reasons. They want to make a difference, and they've got huge hearts. So let me say that. I think their policy ideas seem to me very much, let's help people. You know, we can't leave people to, you know, die in a pile. You know, we need to take care of people. Now, we didn't, in the format we had last night, didn't really get a chance to jump in and ask, okay, well, how are you going to do this? There were a lot of answers from both those two ladies about, I'm going to need more research. I'm going to need to study that more. And I get it. There's no way you can be an expert on that. But I don't love that answer in a debate. I mean, give me something that you have researched and stand on that as a way to sort of win the debate. But I thought the two of them were refreshingly honest about, I don't have all the answers, and I want to come together. I want to talk about it. I want to get perspective. I think those people are wonderful to have in our society. I just don't know that that gives you the best leadership because it requires tough choices. And we've seen this in the city commission, that we've got people that are well-meaning, wonderful people, but they can't make a decision, that they cannot make a hard decision if it seems like we're being tough on somebody. There's been too much of that there. So I've got those two kind of on the left and the right. In the middle, I would put Aaron Hill and Jeremy Schaefer. I wish I knew Jeremy a little bit better because I liked a lot of the things that he said. He's a believer, a military guy. He said that the needle exchange program is we're just enabling people. And I think he's 100% right on that. But I didn't get enough hard policy answers from him about here's how we would, you know, solve spending. Here's how we would take care of specials, whatever. I just was looking a little bit more for him. And because of that, I just don't know that I know that he stands on two conservative feet all the time, fiscally, with the social side of things as well. But I liked a lot of what I heard from him. I would say the same with Aaron Hill. I think Aaron, from what I can tell, is a perfect moderate, for the city. I think that he is the guy who's right in the middle. I think on the business side of things, He's a former entrepreneur, so he knows the business side. I think he respects the fact that we need to run Fargo like a business. But I also heard him say things like, hey, cities our size, they have homeless people. They have debt. They have drug issues. And I thought, from my perspective, I want to hear somebody say, get it, there are people, but we need to try to make a difference here. And we need to have a zero tolerance policy on some things. And I wish I would have seen him be, or heard him be, a little more hawkish on the debt stuff, rather than just like, well, you know, it is what it is. We're going to have debt. We're a city this size. He's probably right, but I want to hear more urgency from my candidates about how we're going to get the financial house in order. And I say this all the time. You probably are sick of me saying it, but the Fargo City Commission keeps bringing us a budget at 11% increases every year. That's not sustainable. It just isn't. Nobody has that much money to continue to spend that much. And they end up whittling it down a little bit. I think the last one started at 11. We ended up at 10.4 or something like that. We just can't do this. You can't have 10% increases all the time with the debt level that we have in the city. And I get it, debt, bonds, whatever, it all gets kind of mixed together there. But I just want to see that somebody says, taxpaying people of Fargo, I get it. You're getting crushed, and we've got to be better in the city to take care of that. I heard that last night from Scott, and I heard that last night from Chad, and I know we've heard that from Tony. So that's how I see the candidates. That may be incorrect, but that's my assessment. I think you got two solid left, two solid right, and then you got two guys in there somewhere in the middle, maybe leaning a little bit more left, a little more right. But I think that both Jeremy and Aaron are good men, and I said it at the end of the debate last night. These are people who are willing to get in the arena and roll up their sleeves and try to make a difference. And I'm impressed with all of them. I think there's some really good options. Whatever Fargo people want, you're going to find a candidate, I think, that lines up the way you want people to have in that commission. So I thought those were some of the kind of the key takeaways there, and kind of my overall perspective on that. I want to play for you a couple of comments that I thought really stood out. And the first one, it was Scott Brecky's comment. We asked all the candidates, does Fargo have a drug problem? And if so, does this needle exchange that we have in Fargo, is it contributing to the drug problem? I thought Scott Brecky had probably his strongest moment with this answer.
If I'm elected, the first motion I would make is to remove the needle exchange program. It does not work. It is a detriment to our community. It's a detriment to the people that live in that surrounding area. As far as the police department, if you look at over the last 4 years, our drug tickets and numbers of people that we're holding accountable for drug use is almost flat. But if you listen to our human services, as far as ambulance, medical providers, we are at a 40% increase in drug overdoses and Narcan uses. So we are not currently enforcing our drug problem in town. We are attracting and growing it, and it needs to stop.
I thought that was a strong moment from him. One of the comments, and I mentioned this a minute ago, was Aaron Hill talking about the debt that we have in the city and his perspective on this.
I don't think it's necessarily how do we eliminate debt, or at least I'm not aware of any community our size that's growing as fast as we are that doesn't carry some sort of debt. Now, does work need to be done? Absolutely. And as others have said, you know, our cash reserves, I mean, we got downgraded by Moody's because they want to see 25% cash reserves. We're hanging right around 20 instead of 25%. So do we need to work on that? Yes. Is it catastrophic? No.
Yeah, I thought a good balanced perspective that we had there. Now, my personal opinion is I think the city finances need to be much stronger. I think we've been way too cavalier with spending and where we have our money. And so I think there needs to be some serious reform there. So I wonder, in my own conservative head, is Aaron Hill the candidate that's going to push for urgency? You know, Matt, I want to hear a little bit of Matt as heck not going to take it anymore, but somebody who's a happy warrior at the same time. And I get that Aaron can be a guy who can be that happy warrior. I just wanted to hear a little bit more, yeah, we need to get serious about this problem. I thought his answer was just a little dismissive, and I wanted a little bit more on that. Nikki Gullickson, as I said, I think a real good person. But I don't think that the issue of homelessness in Fargo, which, yes, we're taking care of. But again, I just thought she seemed not to have the same opinion that I do on where we're at in the homeless
situation. We do have a homeless problem, but it's not as big, I don't believe, as it's perhaps been put out there. But yes, I do think we have a problem. And we also have people who simply don't want help. That's how they want to live. But this is all tied in, again, with mental health, could be addiction. I visited with Chief Stefanowicz. I visited with Chief Lorenz, fire and police. They incidentally spend a lot of time on things that our social services could actually help out with.
And I thought Chad Peterson had one of his best moments talking about how issues downtown need more conversation and more attention in the community.
There was a person, another business owner, gentleman downtown. Again, these are people that are afraid to speak. Called the police. The people from the deck showed up and gave them their card and said, next time you have a problem, don't call the police, call us first. People are afraid to talk. We need to change the perception of what's transpiring downtown. How do you do that? Additional police enforcement and open dialogue with civil servants. Us, potentially us, elected officials, other police officers. I don't care if it's social workers.
And I thought Chad also had one of the better lines of the debate late in the debate when he was asked about how to boost economic development in the city. He said, we need prosperity and we need public safety. And he is right. He nailed it on that one, too. Your calls next. Brian and Crystal are waiting on the phone. Get you folks in here in just a minute. I want to know, who impressed you in the debate last night? And overall, who has impressed you in this race? Where does former Commissioner Tony Gehrig rank? I think that's another question. So Tony was not there. I don't know that this helps him being in Hawaii. I get it. He's got a job. He's got to go there for work. Derek Arneson missed last night, but I think he's made the other debates. But I don't know that it's helping Tony that he's gone through basically the whole sort of campaign there. Now, maybe he's got enough equity built up. It doesn't matter. My last comment before we hit the phones here. We have seen Fargo be run by a liberal majority now for several years. I don't think these people are wacko libs like we would talk about AOC and the squad. We're not talking about that. But we are talking about people who have been very willing to spend money, who have been very much willing to let certain interest groups impact their thinking on homelessness and addiction. We have had way too much indecision. We've had way too much. Should we take a position on Hamas and Israel? Oh, well, gosh, people are mad. So we've had way too much. Let's hire a DEI guy. Let's hire a police chief who, you know, took a knee before he came to town. We've got cop cars with all-inclusive society, whatever. Are those horrible things? No, but we know that they're not the best way to run things. It's time for a conservative majority. It's time that we get a chance for conservatives to say, let's try it our way for a while. Because conservative principles, they just work. They lead to prosperity and they lead to safety. And my hope is some way, somehow, my prayer is that we end up with a conservative mayor and two of those commission seats end up in the hands of conservatives. And we can have a commission again that says no to spending more often, says yes to the right things, supporting our law enforcement. We shouldn't have to have a separate quarter-cent sales tax to provide for our police and fire. That should be the first thing we do. And it's time we need to do that. So that's my hope. It's time. The liberals have had a shot at this for the last 10 years or so. And now we need conservatives in there. That's what I believe. Let's go to the phone lines. Brian is first up. Brian wants to talk about Fargo City business. Hey, Brian, what's going on?
Hey, Steve. Good morning. Well, my only concern is splitting the conservative vote between Dave Pipcorn and Michelle Turnberg, who both would be great mayors.
Yes.
No doubt. Both very good. And that's my concern. Is that how you get, Josh Boshi gets elected? Because the conservative vote is split between two very great individuals.
Yeah, so, really good point, Brian. That's the million-dollar question, is having both. You would have loved for the two of them to get together and say, okay, let's one of us do this, or somebody says, you know what, you take it. I'm going to drop out. And that would be perfect, but I don't think that's going to happen. We know that Michelle's not going to drop out, and it doesn't seem that Dave is going to do that either. The other side, though, has the same concern, Brian, in that Denise Kolpak and Josh Boucher, I think, model the same way in their political views. And I know that Denise would push back strongly against that, but her voting record is what it is. And so I think they're going to split votes as well. And it's going to be interesting. I think if you're hoping for either Dave or Michelle to win, I think you're hoping for Denise to make a late run and a big push and spend every penny that she's got to try to push this thing, because Josh is going to be, I think, in a pretty strong position, and maybe Denise can peel a few votes away from him if she gets really active. I don't know. But, yeah, both sides have that same issue, Brian.
Well, if you wanted to get a conservative, it would have been having one of them, you know, jump in. And Dave, who's a fiscal hawk and a great guy, a longtime commissioner, you know, would have been great.
Yep,
and Michelle,
agree.
Maybe, you know, the next go around.
Right.
On the,
you got it, Brian.
Well,
hey, thank you for calling.
Great on there, but,
yeah, you're right, Brian. Thanks a lot for calling, my friend. You have a great weekend, okay, Brian? Yeah. Take care. All right, let's go to Crystal next on line two. Crystal, good morning.
Well, it was a delightful 2 hours. I listened. I took some notes. And one of the things that Chad was saying is looking at working with the Chamber of Commerce on some of the issues for our city, which I thought was interesting. And thank you for bringing up the ward issue as well. And it seemed as though most of the candidates were looking at the increase in cost. And I think that's a huge factor.
Yeah.
And then Scott was looking at the supply side of where money is looking at in the budget. And he and Scott said that it was $638,000 of just kind of lumped in together, and he would like to more or less do an audit. Well, let's look at those expenditures, and let's justify those expenditures. So I was impressed with Scott, and I was very impressed with Scott Chad Peterson. And so I'm kind of, you know, leaning toward them. They seem to have fiscal, you know, looking at how they spend the money.
Yeah.
And the impact, and we're not a social program here. You know, that's for the social services and the churches. I agree on that.
Yeah,
you know,
Crystal, good points. Yeah, thank you so much for giving a call. Yeah, I think you sum up a lot of things really well from last night, and that's kind of how I see it too. Like where the candidates line up. All right, I want to keep this conversation going here. We got two Marks who want to talk. Hang on, fellas, got a top of the hour break I have to take, but. Let's keep that coming. Now, that opens up a phone line for you, 701-271-1100. Who do you think wins this race? Here we go, hour number two of the Steve Holcim Show, and it is brought to you in part by Dakota Dental Implant. Smiling with your mouth closed, skipping photos, you know you've been doing it. Holding back laughter, that's no way to do it. Passing on dinner invites, avoiding cameras, maybe skipping family gatherings and not being with the people you love the most, that doesn't have to be your normal anymore. No. A new smile can change everything. Your confidence, comfort, everyday life. It's not just about teeth. It's about genuinely enjoying time with the people you love without holding back. Feeling comfortable smiling again matters. They make smiles great again. That's what they do over there at Dakota Implant and Sedation Center in Fargo. Take the first step today. Go online, find out more about them, get comfortable with the folks over there, and then get in touch with them. Get a consultation. Go in and see what they can do for you. Doesn't cost you any money to ask some questions and get some answers. They'll be able to give you all the details about what it would be like with their technology. They can give you a really good look at it ahead of time. DakotaImplant.com, DakotaImplant.com. Time to get off the fence and just do it. All right, it's 7 past the hour here, and we've got the key three coming up in a moment, but I do want to keep the conversation going. If you've got comments on what you heard last night, like Crystal and Brian did on the debate we had last night for Fargo City Commission, we'd love to hear from you, or if you want to talk about the mayor's race or the petition that went through, it's in my key three. Coming up here in a moment, but we are going to have this on the ballot in November to vote on about the free school lunch and breakfast thing. And right now it doesn't look good for those of us who think it's a bad idea. So if you want to comment on any of that, 701-271-1100, that's the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. You can text or phone at that number. Let's go to Mark, and he wants to talk about City Commission and the debate last night. Hey, Mark, how are you doing?
I'm good. Listen, two issues. They sent us out a color flyer showing us the faces of the people who are running, right? But they don't put an RD or I beside their name. Now, this is a classic liberal playbook trick to make sure you don't know they're Democrat. Classic. They're going to make sure that you don't know what their political philosophy is, so you'll vote for a liberal because it's, what do they call it? Non-party issue, right?
Yeah, non-partisan, yeah, yeah.
Non-partisan, which is crap. Either they're liberal or they're not. The other thing is, why is there a property tax in Fargo at all when there's trillions of dollars worth of oil underneath our feet that can be harvested and at, 2 or 3% tax on that per barrel would pay all the cost? I don't get that.
Yeah, so you brought up two really good questions. And I've seen mailers of all kinds in these city elections. And you're right, Mark, they don't typically ever list a party. And I'm sure that they feel like, to your point, sometimes they don't want you to know. In Ruby Red, North Dakota, they don't want you to know if they consider themselves a Democrat. I think they're just going to say because it's not a race where you're voting for Democrats, Republicans, there's no primary in the party or anything like that, they're going to say, well, we don't have to say, so why not? I will say that I saw a mailer with a bunch of conservative Fargo candidates on it, and that didn't have the Republican or the R next to it either. So I think both sides play the game the same way in this primary piece. So that's my answer on that one.
The liberals do it more. They know that putting that D beside their name, guarantees in the middle of the so-called moderate won't vote for.
Yeah. Yeah. In North Dakota, I'm sure it happens that way, where, look, the population, even in Fargo, I think it's probably 55-45 conservative or 60-40 conservative. I think even in Fargo, where it's a little bit more liberal, people say, why am I going to take that chance if I don't have to do it? On the oil thing, so this was the big push behind, or this was a big topic when we were talking about the Measure 4 movement last year. Do you remember this one? This is where all of the property taxes were going to be paid for all property in North Dakota through this Measure 4. And it would have required the state to just figure out how they're going to pay it. And to your point, there's a lot of oil under our feet. Now, the state doesn't own the oil, but we do get that tax that comes in from the drilling and exploration and exporting out of the state. And that's what goes into the legacy fund. Now, the legacy fund may get big enough someday where they could just write that check out of the legacy fund every year and it would be there. I don't believe they could do that yet. I think there's like $13, $14 billion in that fund. But this is the big question is, will the state of North Dakota be able to come up with a plan that will take care of at least the primary residents? I don't think anybody says a business, we own property as a business. We're not saying that that's what the taxpayers should pay for. But for the primary residences, why not? And that's a big question I think the North Dakota legislature is going to continue to wrestle with.
Okay. How about putting flow meters on all the wells like the natives do? Do we have flow meters on all as well?
Sorry, the phone got muffled there. What are you talking about? The phone meters? What?
The flow meters. Flow meters on oil wells. The natives have on their wells, they have flow meters. They know exactly what's coming out of those wells. I've heard that some of the private wells don't have no flow meters, so that the companies can cheat on the tax.
Oh. I don't know. That's a good question. I will have to ask my friend Ron Ness or somebody who is in charge of tax. So tax commissioner Crotius would be probably the guy to ask on that. I've not heard that before, Mark. So you're breaking news for us here.
Julie Fedorchak. She's real big. With
Julie
guys,
would know that too. Yeah. Yes, sir. We're supposed to get.
She's
She's the number one expert in the nation, I imagine.
She's good. Yeah, she's good on that. Mark, hey, thanks for calling. You bring up some good topics and stuff a lot of us are thinking about. So thanks for contributing to the program, my friend. All right, that opens up a phone line for you, 701-271-1100. You can text that number as well. Email studio@flagfamily.com if you would like to do that. Okay, let's get to the key three. I think we can squeeze this in before we hit our break here. Number one, the petition is approved, and you, if you live in North Dakota, will have to make a decision whether to guarantee breakfast and lunch being paid for all public school students. I saw a couple stories on this, and they say free breakfast and lunch. I don't like that term because it's not free. You and I are going to pay for it through a constitutional measure, but they have the signatures for this. They needed 31,000. They had 49,000 that got turned in. So the measure will appear as Measure 3 on the November 3rd ballot. It would require all public school districts, public schools, and public charter schools to provide a free breakfast and free lunch every single school day to all enrolled students, whether they want it or not. The money would have to be put aside to do that. Private schools and tribal schools will have the option, but there's not a requirement to participate. So they could opt into this as well and have it paid for by tax money there. I will continue to shout this from the rooftop till I'm blue in the face. We have solved the problem already about how to make sure that no kid is left behind. We spend $3 million on this every year. There's $6 million allotted for it, and we give you free school breakfast and lunch up to $72,000 of income if you've got a four-person household. So the poorest among us have their breakfast and lunches paid for already. This plan would put $67 million a year into a fund that requires that's got $3 million of need. And we're going to put $67 million into that. What happens when big government money goes into accounts that just sit there? It's a temptation for people to steal it. Some way, somehow. In North Dakota, I think we're better than most. But if you think that there's not going to be a temptation with all this money sitting there that can't really go anywhere or do anything with, there's going to be a temptation for someone to try to get at that money some way, somehow. And this is a constitutional amendment. That means it comes off of it's the first line item on the budget before the legislators get to decide anything. So this cannot be touched. Please vote no on this. We're solving this problem already. If you want to be more generous with it, give free lunch up to $100,000. Okay, fine, we can do that too. But this is not the answer. And I've heard stories about people who have had the petition in front of their face, and people say, do you want kids to have lunches and meals in school? Do you want kids to be hungry in school? Sign here. Well, that doesn't nearly tell the whole story. I'm not giving up on this. I think between now and November, there's an opportunity for us to say, hey, this sounds great, but most of you probably don't know that we take care of this already. And we're going to need that tax money for other things in the days ahead. I'll finish the key three coming up next. Josh Boucher, a money-raising fool so far in the mayor's race in Fargo. All right, I got him fresh off the printer. I don't know why I print these out. I could just look at them online. The lunch specials today at PetroServe USA, doesn't matter if you're seeing it on a computer screen or on a piece of paper in front of you, they always look good. Valley City today, mac and beef. Tell me you're not going to get a good full gut out of that deal. Mac and beef. That's a good meal right there. That's a good hearty North Dakota, Minnesota meal. Love it. Harwood meatball subs today. West Main southern chicken bowl or lasagna. Boy, both those sound good. You get the lasagna at the 12th Avenue store as well. Swedish meatballs today at Wahpeton and Ulan. At 205 NP Avenue also, they've got the Swedish meatballs. 45th Street store spaghetti and meatballs. In Castleton today, the bacon cheeseburger hot dish. I've never had it, but a buddy of mine had that one time and said it was the best. Cheesy beef potatoes in Glendon and Sloppy Joe's on the Cheyenne Street store in Fargo. PetroServe USA helping America feel better. Finishing up the key three, number two on this story is that we now have numbers on who has raised what when it comes to donations in the Fargo mayor's race. Josh Boucher has raised more money than all mayoral candidates combined, all the other ones. He's got $128,000 in total contributions. So he's got some big ones there. He got a $10,000 donation from the Next 50 PAC, a Democrat PAC out of D.C., gave him $10,000. And a lot of, you know, between $2,000 and $5,000 donations there as well. Michelle Turnberg is second in the fundraising parade. She's got $44,475. Her big donation came from Kevin Kramer's backed Badlands PAC, which gave her $25,000. And she got a number of donations from local people as well, but a big number coming from that one PAC there. Denise Kolpak has $18,000 in donations. Dave Pepcorn, $16,700 in donations. And Siku Sirleaf, $6,000 of donations there. So no PAC money for Pepcorn, Sirleaf, or Kolpak. Like, Kolpak should have PAC money, right? I mean, it rhymes with her name, for gosh sakes. Her largest donor was George Hanson of Moorhead, gave her $10,000 on May 3rd. So more than half of her money came from one place as well. Dave Pepcorn, biggest gift came from Jeff Johnson of Fargo and Wade and Donna Wolf of Fargo at $5,000 each. So it's a fair amount of money. You got to have some dough behind you in these races these days to make it happen. And that's what the numbers look like there on raising money. Story number three is that the White Earth Nation has released its financial impact report for the proposed casino and convention center near Moorhead. Clay County Administrator Steve Larson said the tribe bought 280 acres of land near I-94 and Highway 336 for $3.9 million, as back in late 2024. The project is expected to cost, reports Valley News Live, $177 million. The casino will have 950 gaming machines and 10 tabletop games. There would be a 200-room hotel with a 15,000-square-foot ballroom, meeting spaces, dining options, bars, and a gift shop. The parking lot would have 1,000 spaces and a 50-pad RV park. It'll require 391 full-time equivalent construction jobs with wages of $39 an hour. Once built, the facility will need about 600 full-time employees, and average earnings will be about $55,000 a year. There would also be 102 part-time jobs. They believe the casino will have 1.1 million visitors a year. 927,000 will come from outside of Clay County. I imagine it'd be a lot of people from Fargo, right, that would go over if they want to do a little gambling on the weekend. Just a short drive there. You can't do that in Fargo. I guess there's like some charitable gaming stuff you can do, but not like what a casino can give you. And the study estimates about $175 million annual economic impact for Clay County and $244 million a year for the state of Minnesota. I have gotten some emails from a group of concerned citizens. They've got a name like Concerned Citizens Against the Moorhead Casino, something like that. I should go back and find those emails again because I would like to have them on to have them give their side of the story. This sounds great, right? I mean, everything about this at face value, you say, wow, all this money coming in. But is there a price to pay for that in our collective moral fabric? Are we creating more gambling addicts? I don't know. I'm one who someday would like to put $20 down on an NFL game. Now, I guess I can drive down to Wahpeton and do it, but it's not handy. But for me, I don't have an addictive personality. I'm very sure that I could put a bet in here or two, have some fun. If I win, great. If I lose, great. It's not going to be life-changing money either way. But not everybody's that way. And do I want gambling on every street corner? I don't know. I mean, I go down to Sioux Falls, and they have got all, you know, there's a casino all over in that in Sioux Falls. Casinos all over there. I don't know. I don't like that either. And this makes me think about the Fargo Convention Center, too. So we're building this big thing in Moorhead. Now we're going to build one in Fargo, and they kind of do the same thing. So I don't know. Certainly, this is going to be a topic, I think, of the discussion in the city. We could have asked it last night, too, on the commission, I guess. Could have asked, okay, if Moorhead's going to do this thing and they have a convention center, should we just not spend the people of Fargo's money, take the quarter cent, whatever, hospitality tax, and I don't know, just keep it in a fund for a rainy day and come up with something else to do with it down the line? I don't know. It's a question I ask myself. I don't have the answer to that one. But these numbers are impressive. I have to say that. Again, what's the flip side? What will be the law enforcement need there? Will we, you know, will this attract the wrong kind of people? I don't know any of those things. Certainly that's something that's worth talking about. So those are what I believe to be the three most consequential stories in the news cycle today. Okay, I want to, do I have time to get to the, I think I do. I know, Addison's like, Steve, you only have a minute. So Dr. Phil and Dr. Oz are targeting upcoding and administrative bloat, the dark underbelly of the $4 trillion U.S. healthcare machine. This is Dr. Phil.
They're charging $640 an hour for services that could be performed by a high school graduate. Somebody had to be typing this out. Somebody had to be generating this invoice, and that's I mean, there's $340,000 on average per patient. Is everybody complicit in this? Does nobody say, wait a minute, I'm sorry, I can't do this.
They're talking about data entry and medical scribing, filling out the billing codes, but it's bundled into a physician service or hospital facility fee, and the patient gets billed at the rate of a world-class specialist is the background on this. I had no idea. But like everything else, you know, there's a lot of money that goes in there. And so, well, we can get away with it. Who's asking these questions? I think it's a great subject to talk about. Want to pass that along. All right, Bridget Riedel coming up next. 15 minutes, that's all it takes to get the paperwork done and drive off the lot down at Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton with a brand new vehicle. Just think about that. You could go down there today, find a vehicle, drive it off the lot by the end of the day, and it's not going to take you till the end of the day. Once you find that car, 15 minutes or less, they do everything electronically. They make it easy. And if you happen to live where I do, in the metro area, well, they have 18 service drivers that'll come up and get your car and drive it down to the shop if there needs to be work done. And if it's an oil change or something simple like that, they've actually got a mobile oil change unit that'll come up to town and take care of it for you in the parking lot or your driveway. It's fantastic how easy they make the experience. DriveWithVision.com is the website. DriveWithVision.com, Vision Ford Lincoln in Wahpeton. And appreciate them sponsoring the show. They are our studio sponsor here every day. DriveWithVision.com. All right, every week at this time, we get together with our good friend Bridget Riedel, Ag Director at Fieldstone Group, Flag Family Media, and we have to talk about what's going on in the ag world around us. Here each week. Bridget, good morning to you. How are you?
Fabulous. How are you?
I'm good. Could use a shot of rain in my yard, and I know our farmers are loving the dry conditions to get out and get some field work done, but I'm guessing some of them would even say, you know, if I had to leave the tractor in the shed for an afternoon, if we got a half inch or an inch of rain, that wouldn't be the worst thing. Am I right on that or no?
I think you are, and I had a great conversation with a farmer over in Barnes County earlier this week. Made mention of the fact that their top inch to 2 inches is dry. And we're certainly seeing that's what's blowing in these horrendous 60-mile-an-hour winds. Oh. But there's moisture underneath that. Everybody is currently planting into that topsoil. You're maybe planting some into moisture. Got a lot of seed that's sitting in dry dirt and waiting for that rainfall. So we are always one rainfall event away from a flood or a drought here in North Dakota.
Right. That's the way it goes. Yeah. I've got to think that it's been encouraging, though, to have the temperatures warming up as much as they are. When some of that young seed gets in the ground, you don't want it sitting in freezing cold dirt either.
And freezing cold rain. You like it when it's a little warmer rain out there as well.
Yeah. When we've had that, we've had a really cool spring, but boy, the last week or so, has really been nice. You told me, Steve, I want to talk about farmers using life insurance for farm expenses. I'm fascinated by this. Tell us about this story.
So this is a little bit of advice from a financial advisor, actually, because farmers can often get financing for farm expenses, and they may not have to go to their bank. So this is when you are properly setting up a whole life insurance policy. Now, disclaimer, I'm not an agent. Yep. This is certainly a conversation you should have with them.
Got it. Yep.
And whole life, not universal, not variable, not index universal. This is whole life with a dividend-paying company structured correctly with immediate access to cash. You can borrow against the cash value of the policy for farm expenses. It's a flexible payback. And if the policy owner dies, the insurance pays the death benefit minus the loan. Otherwise, if you'd been on term insurance for, say, $1 million, the bank would still want you to use that money to pay down or off debt. So it does give the farm more control and flexibility on paying back whenever they want without a penalty. The insurance company may not necessarily care. They say, you know what, if somebody dies, we're still going to take care of things the way we're supposed to. So it doesn't matter if that payment is made today or 50 years from now. Mm. And some of this advice comes from a book called Farming Without the Bank. For those who are interested, might not be a bad idea to just check what other little tidbits are in that particular book. And right now, when we have these squeeze commodity prices and margins, there's certainly lots of advice out there. But know what's best for your farm and have that discussion with your farm business management partners. Is it your spouse? Is it your siblings? And know what's right for your operation.
It's a great discussion. And I've heard some version of this over the last couple of years, just different ways to find those creative assets to tap into one way or another. Can you take a loan against a 401k and all those things that, you know, does you have a spouse that works in town? And do you have something you can do there where you put money in but then borrow against it? And there's all kinds of repercussions, of course, when you do that, because then you lose the ability of that money to go to work. But a lot of people are sitting on equity in some of these policies, whether it's insurance, investments, property, whatever. And, you know, a couple, 3 years ago, you'd say, well, you know, go ahead and take out a second mortgage or refinance everything you've got, because you can get even a refinance loan cash out for 3.5-4%. Well, you can't get that right now. So if you want to do
it.
Yeah, maybe you already did it. Yeah, yeah. There's that too. Yeah, that might be the case. But yeah, I think mortgage rates have come down a little bit, and so your refinance can be done at historically decent numbers, but it's nowhere what it used to be a couple, 3 years ago. Yeah, you talked also about an idea for credit management on the farm. There's a lot of discussion about how do we manage some of these invoices that we have.
And why is it important? We understand that margins are being squeezed, costs are stubbornly high, and even farmers who have maintained a very strong credit history have more tools available to bridge some financial gaps than they might realize. So when you are looking at taking better control of your credit, using it wisely, making sure you have a very well-informed credit approach may mean that you're doing extra homework to look at the bigger picture. Do you have a very comprehensive view of your borrowing costs? If you are farming in conjunction with other people, do you understand each other's financial situation? This is not a time to be a little bit modest and say, well, I don't necessarily want to share everything. Even if you're, say, your two brothers farming together, everybody's got have separate machinery, separate land, but you work together, you're probably going to need to have these conversations. Because if brother A comes to brother B on Tuesday morning at the farm shop, instead of getting the day started, but saying, I don't know if I can farm this year, we've waited too long to have this discussion as well. And so look at what your credit histories are. Think about credit monitoring, especially with all the fraud, Steve. We've talked so many times about people wanting to tap into your line of credit, do fraudulent bank loans, fraudulent land deals. Make sure your credit is still safe. If you're talking with your banker, debt to income ratios. Earlier this week, we saw Greg Seaman sitting in for our own Scott Hennen, and Greg and I had a great conversation, you know, as a former ag lender in his previous career. Those were things that he looked at very closely. Capital and collateral. You know, have we tapped all of our cash flow and income streams? What are things that we're looking at differently? New business plans. I have a number of farmers who've made mention that the next generation's coming back to the farm, be it my child, my niece or nephew, but they have to bring an enterprise with them.
Yeah.
They have to bring something back in that adds to our cash flow as an overall operation. So I don't think these are surprising notes to the farmers who are listening. They think about this and when they're in the tractor, when they're planting, they're discovering in their heads, you know, what do I have to do differently and how? But I do think that just having the discussion may spark just a little bit of imagination or an idea that someone may need to tap into.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Yeah, you got to have that entrepreneurial spirit, no doubt about that, to make it work these days. A little creativity goes a long way. Speaking of going a long way, eggs going a long way on our dinner plate these days.
Don't you love a good egg?
Am I the only one?
We do. Okay, yes. So Americans are consuming on average 273 eggs per person this year. That's a 6% increase. Huh? All right, why is it an increase? Any thoughts?
I bet it's the GLP-1 drugs. You got to get your protein somewhere to keep your muscle fiber up because you're losing stuff. And eggs and lean meat is where I think people are going.
And I also think that based on cost per gram of protein, eggs are still a great buy.
Oh, yeah. Now they are. For a while, it was eggs were like $2 a piece. But now we're back to you don't have to have a full bin to be able to afford a dozen eggs anymore. So,
and I think that's
thing.
You're exactly right. When you look at the Gen Z generation, 66% of that generation is following a high protein diet that truly includes a lot of eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're finding great ways to do that. Even though, as you mentioned, prices have skyrocketed due to so many different things. Part of it was bird flu, but we've stabilized in that market. And so we're seeing our retail costs are about 27% down versus last year. Yeah. I think that's a win. We know that beef prices have certainly been slightly different. And I will continue to surprise some listeners by saying that if you're looking for the most protein per ounce, it's actually lamb. So
is that right? Okay.
Have a little discussion with your protein purveyor to see about putting something new on your plate.
Put a little veal in your meal.
I don't think there's well, that would be a beef form.
Oh,
veal coming from a beef animal as a young dairy calf.
Oh, I thought. Wait a minute.
Mm-hmm. Veal comes from a beef animal versus what you would get from lamb, and then mutton is an older sheep.
I don't know what I'm thinking. I've got my wires crossed on that.
It's okay.
For some reason, I had in my mind that veal was lamb.
Nope. Veal is not lamb. But do you want me to find a recipe for you so we can try it?
My dad is rolling over in his grave right now that I didn't know that.
Oh.
So, okay.
But Steve, you didn't raise sheep, so this would be a surprise.
But I should know that. I should know better. Anyway, okay, well, there you go. Oh, put some of that in your meal, too. I think the whole thing works there. But you're right. The thing about eggs, Bridget, is if you get a couple eggs, you're full for most of the morning. And for me, who tries to stay active at my old age, I need stuff to make me feel full because I am always hungry, especially this time of year when I start running a little bit more. I am always hungry, and I hate meals where I eat some, and a half hour later I'm starving. Eggs, that has some longevity. There's some shelf life on eggs.
Well, and speaking of shelf life, there's all sorts of shelf life to a number of headlines that we're going to be seeing over the next few days. You know that President Trump has been talking with China. There was a headline just off of Successful Farming this morning saying double-digit billions in Chinese farm purchases are coming. I look forward to a conversation that I have every Friday with a commodities trader at about 1:20 today. I'll be curious to see his take on that. We saw the movement of E15 as an ethanol fuel being approved for year-round use across the U.S. past the House, making its way into the Senate. Historically, the Senate has been a lot tougher on these types of things. We're going to see what they have to say coming up legislatively about that move and what that impact will look like to us here in North Dakota. First of all, for E15, that's great if you're a corn producer. We'll probably see a little run-up in the corn market. But will it negatively impact soybeans when it comes to soy diesel? Or does that give them an opening for some changes on their side of the equation as well?
Interesting stuff. Yeah,
always good headlines.
Always good headlines. Lots of good stuff. And nobody better than our very own Bridget Riedel to break it all down for us each Friday. Thank you, my friend. You have a great rest of the week.
You as well, Steve. It's fun to bring some just different things and a little bit of a smile every Friday to you.
There you go. There you go. Thanks, Bridget. You take care.
You as well.
When we come back, Your opinions coming in on Convention Center, do we need two of them in the metro area? And some interesting comments coming in on that. Phone lines open as well, 271-1100. Steve Ahlstrom Show back after this. All right, finishing up here on the Steve Ahlstrom Show. Got a few minutes left here. Still got time for a call or two. Who you like in the mayor's race? Who do you want winning the city commission seats? And also a race we haven't talked a lot about is West Fargo District 13, where you've got Judy Lee, Austin Schauer, Jim Jonas. They are being challenged by three newcomers who say the people we have not represented the district as well as we would. And we want to get in there and do that. And Kelly Armstrong has personally endorsed the incumbents, Schauer and Judy and Jim. And he says they've done a very good job. So Kelly's generally pretty good on stuff like this. If they were being wacko liberals, I don't think Kelly would support them. But I have heard some people say, yeah, they get a little squishy on certain issues more often than I would like. Don't know much about that, but if you have an opinion on that race, I'd be curious to hear what you're thinking about that as well. I was talking earlier about the Moorhead, the tribe putting up the convention center and casino in Moorhead there, and I asked the question, do we need two convention centers? And I thought, by the way, I didn't mention this, but Jeremy Schaefer, one of the city commission candidates, I thought had a really strong answer on the subject of the convention center. And he basically said what we've said here on this show a few times before, that if there's not a location that makes sense, that can fund itself going forward, let's not even do it. And that's a pretty fiscal hawkish statement to make, though. There's a lot I like about Jeremy. He may need a little time, a little seasoning, and kind of refining his message a little bit. And I don't know how well funded he is, but I like a lot of things I hear from him. I did. So the convention center, we're out of two of those. There was, by the way, I think a lot of appetite for putting the convention center downtown from the candidates that I heard last night. I don't think I had anybody saying Brew Hall is the right spot, even though that's what the committee that forwarded to the commission, that's what they came up with. And then I think Denise, that said, let's add downtown. And everybody said, okay, we'll consider downtown. So it's downtown or Brew Hall. Judging what I heard last night, seems like they much favor downtown to Brew Hall. Walkability and access and what else is around there to do. The same kind of thing we heard John Strand say, by the way, when we had him on. He said, when I come out, I want to say, do I want to go left or right or straight ahead? And out of Brew Hall, I don't know where I'm going. And I did pick up that Aaron Hill mentioned that they are asking for a TIF district for their real estate taxes, which that's an interesting discussion, too. We should have a show where we talk about the differences on that. And in my mind, there is the program where I'm going to build this building on a vacant lot. You're not making any tax money on it. No, I'm going to do it. So I'm not going to pay taxes for 15 years. But after that, I pay the full value. And that's one way to do it. And then there's what the Brew Hall guys have said is we're going to pay our property taxes, but we would like that money to be assigned to the region in which we're doing this business. So to me, that's a little easier for me to put up with than the other. But like you've heard me before say, I'm fine with some of those in all categories. All we have to do is not be idiots as we spend money for 15 years and then look at what our investment turns into. So I'm in the minority among the conservative group. I imagine I'm in the minority among listenership here, but that's how I see it. So what can I tell you? But a text message came in on this. Steve, as an outside observer, I think a new Fargo Convention Center is already a runaway train. Yeah, you're probably right, although technically it's not. Technically, if Jeremy Schaefer gets elected, he might say, look, none of these plans make sense. Let's not do any of them. I think that would be popular with people. If it really doesn't, I think that the committee, the commission, taxpayers are just going to have to decide, can you live with a TIF district like they're talking about with Brewhalla? Is that a buzzkill for you enough for you to say, let's not do it? Again, they're not saying we're not going to pay taxes. It's going to be targeted for a certain place. Our friend Crystal sent a text message in. Steve, I'm listed as donating big bucks to Dave Pepcorn. I am a voter, not an out-of-town PAC pushing liberal agendas. Well, thanks for letting us know. Your name doesn't appear, Crystal, in any of the media reports that I've seen on this thing under Dave Pepcorn. But thanks for letting us know. And I'm glad there are people that are contributing to good conservative candidates. Steve, about the veal and the lamb, we learn something new every day. Yeah, yes, we do. Yes, we do. And I did today. I'm a little embarrassed by that, but that's okay. Not the first or last time I will have been embarrassed and done something stupid. So there we go on that. Okay, that'll put a wrap on it for the Steve Alsham Show here for today. Thanks for being with me, my friend. I do hope you have a great weekend. Today might be a little windy. Tomorrow looks like across most of the state much better. Have a great one. Keep on flying that flag.